Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the STR Show. This episode's a good one. You might know him from the Gas Monkey Garage, the TV show Fast and Loud. It is Richard Rawlings comes on the show. Shits on me a little bit. It's a fun episode, actually. He's a really good dude. Really enjoyed having him on the show. Remember, if you are streaming the show on SoundCloud, this is like your last week to do it. We are leaving SoundCloud. So you can find us anywhere else, iTunes, Google, iHeartRadio, Spotify, YouTube, everywhere but SoundCloud, beginning on February 1st. Don't forget to go to gasdigitalnetwork.com. You could use the code SDR. You get 20% off the whole network, a 7-day free trial, and access to every show immediately, the live stream, the live chat, the HD, commercial-free, all that good stuff. Every episode we've ever done since the dawn of time, and 22 other shows that are out there on the Gas Digital Network. Now launching with Zach Wild's Wild Goose Show, which is really going to be awesome. We have the Aaron Berg Comedy Podcast called Berg's Base, as well as a bunch of other shows, 22 shows. It's crazy. Just go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use the code SDR. But remember, the newest 20 episodes, always free everywhere. And here it is right now, the Richard Rawlings episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I'm beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far. You need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again now. Almost my full-time co-host. I can't go that far and say full-time co-host, but close enough. James, how are you, buddy?
I'm getting so goddamn close. I feel like Christopher Moltisanti in the first season of The Sopranos. I'm close to becoming a made man, baby.
I just, you know, as we know, when Imperioli was on the show, I've never seen a single episode of Sopranos. I don't know why that is, but I just never did. All right, so now this dude, fucking 16 seasons of the show Fast and Loud. He also is got a brand new YouTube channel. He's a youtube.com/getmonkified. It'll take you straight there. I read the whole book of Fast and Loud, Blood, Sweat, and Beers back out in 2015, and the dude just gave a fucking $10,000 away at the Gas Monkey Garage Instagram page as well. Fucking crazy. It is Richard Rawlings. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. How's it going, guys?
Good. First of all, let me ask you this question. Just at the top of the show, we both have companies that have the word gas in it. My network is called Gas Digital, your Gas Monkey Garage. And we tried to do a giveaway with money involved not that long ago, and we got shut down pretty quickly that they said you can't do it because it's gambling, and we got shut down. Is there different legal rules where you are, where we are? Because you're, I don't know, in Texas, they don't give a shit or what?
Where are you guys at?
New York City.
Oh, yeah, New York City, come on. They got rules for everything. You just had to grease somebody's palms, I guess.
Yeah, they shut us down immediately, my friend.
Yeah, there are some rules that you have to go through. We do a lot of the contests. We give away my cars all the time. We're in the process of giving away all my cars. And we have to go through a third-party administration and have lawyer work done, all kinds of things.
Okay, well, at least you got it done. Because we wanted to give away a PlayStation 5 and some cash. And I think it lasted 3 days before we had to shut it down. So kudos to you and your legal team. The first thing that I saw when I Googled your name this week that happened that is such a cool thing, Fonzie's motorcycle. You spent $230,000. The first thing that freaked me out, because I was like, it said, I know you were very close to your father and you talk a lot about him in your book as well. And you said your father was such a huge fan of Happy Days. And I was like, well, how old is this guy? Fucking A, you're not, but you and I are the same age. So how did you not be a fan of Happy Days and it was just for your dad?
Oh, no. I think you misunderstood. I liked Happy Days also. I watched it every day when I got home from school. You know, I'd watch the reruns, but my dad was literally like the Fonz, you know. He was the more, the 70s version of the Fonz, you know. You know, quick story. He was getting a lot of shit from my stepmom about not taking part in the elementary school carnival, you know, that all the parents have to take part in the mom's baked goods and the dad mm-hmm. little dart game that crushes balloons, or little pick up the rubber ducky with the number on it, you know, all that kind of stuff. And she was giving my dad shit for not taking part in it. And so he's like, I'm cool, I'll do it. He goes, just set up a little area for me. And so the carnival gets rolling, right? And everybody's doing their thing. And of course, my dad's late on purpose because he went entrance. He comes tearing across the schoolyard on his Kawasaki LTD 750 and does a donut, spurs up some dirt, pops the hill up on top of the tarmac there where we had the little carnival going, and parks right next to his table and pulls out a little sign, kissing booth, and starts making out with all the PTA moms.
Wow.
All day long. Just unzipped his little leather jacket and stuff and was like, yeah, he didn't have to participate in any more activities after that.
That is great. What a fucking cool ass dad. Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. He was pretty rad.
Oh, is your father still alive?
Yeah. He's at the advanced, the ending stages of Alzheimer's. So he's in a little bit of memory care lockdown and stuff. But, I go up there and bring some beers and hang out every once in a while. And, you know, sometimes he knows what's going on, but most of the time he doesn't.
Yeah. I had that. My father passed away a few years ago, and same thing started happening towards the end where, as I said, you and I are the same age. I think you were born in 69, so was I. So we're roughly probably grew up loving the same sorts of music and had the same TV shows and stuff. Speaking of which, leads me to this. So I think you mentioned in some interview you were a big fan of Mel Brooks as well, right? I think that I'm right when you said that. I could be wrong, or maybe it was somewhere you said it, that like it was Blazing Saddles or one of the...
Oh, yeah. Everybody likes all that stuff.
Yeah. I'm currently listening to Mel Brooks' book, which is 14 hours long, and he voices the whole thing. I'm going to say shame on you, sir, for only doing the preface to your book. I know it was 6 years ago, but you only did the preface. I know you're a busy man, but I was disappointed to hear some other jackass read your fucking bio. I listened to books only.
I got to tell you, it was a combination of being pissed off at the establishment. I wrote the book, and Discovery kept trimming it down and taking out all the good parts and were making me massage the good parts to not be so hideous and nasty and crazy. And so I was kind of pissed off at the situation by the time we got to the end.
Oh, okay. So it was a decision that screw them. I'm not reading this book because it's a minor compared to how I wrote it originally.
Oh, yeah. It came back with, all kinds of red ink all over it after the first draft. So we're going to be writing the real stories, the real deal here pretty soon. I think I'll be able to maybe even compete with Max Tucker or something like that.
Well, I mean, I realize it. So the thing that I love about it is that, and this goes, I think it's, I'm not unveiling anything people don't know, is that you openly do, and you had Mark Cuban on your show, the monkey trap thing you do on your YouTube page. We had Mark Cuban on our show as well. And one of the things he said to me that you seem to do as well is when you realize there's things that you may not be as good at. So it's better to bring in other people to do those things. You mentioned in the book about social media. You mentioned it about Aaron, I think his name is the guy that does all the, that used to do the work on the TV show, where you're not a guy that will manufacture parts and build, do it yourself. You might be able to do some of it, but you're not as good as others. Your genius lies in the marketing, in the business side of it, and being passionate about it. Is that fair enough?
It really is. Absolutely. I'm a business guy at heart. I understand mechanics and mechanicking, but I tend to gravitate towards putting the team together to make the best product. And over the years we've had some amazing team work that happened here at Gas Monkey. And I couldn't be more proud of over 150 cars that we built start to finish in 7 years, which to put it into perspective, a really unbelievable hot rod shop that builds cars might build 20 or 25 in their entire lifetime. You know, I mean, we built a lot of cars.
That's great. I mean, I'm a little bit, as again, I said, right, pre-interview, I'm somewhat of a puss, right? I'm not like a real rock and roll dude as I should be, but there's only one car that I love, and tell me if it's a bad car or not. Feel free. So as I mentioned to you, I was born in 69. I have a twin brother who was born in 1970. I was born New Year's Eve. So I was born in 69. He was born in 70. We're 4 minutes apart, December 31st to 1st.
That's very cool. That's my dad's birthday.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool. The 31st or the 1st?
The 31st.
Oh, cool. So that's mine. My brother's the first. So my dream car is to get a 1970 Plymouth Cuda, the one that was released in 69. You know, they do them before the model year sometimes. They release them so that it pays homage to my brother and I. What do you feel about my dream car?
Love it. I actually have a 71 Cuda at the shop here right now. But no, Cudas, those body style cars are absolutely unbelievable. You know, nothing better than that big old pistol grip, hog leg shifter, and, you know, bucket seats and crazy colors, you know, with the crazy purples and yellows and butterscotches. And, you know, you can't go wrong with that, but you better get it quick because they do nothing but go up in value.
How much is one these days? Like, if I wanted, I want a resto modded one. I don't want a traditional one. I want to modernize it with air conditioning and shit like that and power steering. How much am I looking at?
If you were going to do that, you know, the best way to do it would be to buy one already done at like Barrett Jackson or Meekum or something like that, because, and then massage it into what you want. And you're going to spend $100,000 to $150,000 as opposed to like, if you came to me and wanted me to build it the way the Gas Monkey would build it, it'd probably be closer to $300,000, $350,000.
What do you have for like $3,000?
Yeah, let's see where that goes.
I actually have something here that I can sell you for $3,000.
Yeah, steering wheel.
Yeah. I think it's yeah, back here.
It's in that blue bag, but it's in that blue bag behind you.
There it is.
I'll take it. James, do you have a favorite car, James?
None. I am done driving. This is so crazy. I look at your office, sir. It reminds me, all my boys back home in Vegas are mechanics. I have been in an office. I can guarantee you, I know how your office smells. Like, I know all of this. It's perfect. And I'm like, last time I drove, I almost died. I'm done with it. It's 10 years.
Also, New Yorkers don't drive a lot.
Yeah, my favorite car is the Q-Train. That's my favorite car. I love it. I just put on headphones and read a book.
Fair enough. So, Richard, you kind of dropped the bomb last year on Joe Rogan about the show not being picked up again, and now you guys are focusing mostly, or you canceled it or whatever.
Let's fix that. We're not doing this. How do I say this diplomatically without getting in trouble? The show is not happening anymore. That was a mutual decision. I'm very grateful for Fast and Loud and for the life that it led, and all the different offshoots and spinoffs and everything that we did. But it was time to move on. You know, our social media following and what we're doing now is way bigger than what we were able to accomplish towards the final years on Discovery.
Right.
You'd be amazed at the very small amount of viewers that they get on a primetime Monday show now. It's pretty small.
Now, believe me, I'm well aware. You know, we're in this the podcast world, and our network gets more views than most traditional broadcast television station. That is, it is what it is. But what's amazing in listening to your book as well, you spent, I think it was 8 years, and I could be wrong on the timing, so I apologize, trying to get the show on the air. Is that a fair assessment?
I did. I started in 2004 with the idea of becoming popular enough to spread the word of hot rods and motorcycles, to get the TV show, to you know, be on Discovery and all that kind of stuff. And it did. It took a solid 8 years to get it done. I saw it. We shot all our own sizzle reels. We pitched it. We did everything. A lot of people think, you know, Discovery just went and found them. And that's not true. We went after television from the very day one, because that was the way that we were going to. I wanted Gas Monkey to be the largest automotive motorcycle lifestyle brand on the planet. And the truth is, because we just had a study done, as far as recognizability in the world, Gas Monkey Garage is only second to Harley Davidson in the automotive motorcycle lifestyle.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. That's amazing.
We're in 100 some odd countries, translated into I don't even know how many languages. We are all over the place, and a lot of really kick-ass things happening now that we've been able to cut the cable, so to speak.
And are you, I have to imagine, I could be wrong, I didn't do the due diligence here, but
probably are.
You basically set up the garage. You set up the garage with the idea of getting it to be a TV show. That was the reason for starting the Gas Monkey Garage, right? I mean, that was really the idea.
It really was. The light bulb moment was laying in bed watching the shows that were on television at the time. And we all know who they are, so we don't need to mention them. But I realized that my wife and my kid at the time were not in the room. There was too much bravado and kind of cussing and beeping and kicking boxes and bandanas down to here and bulldogs on chains. And when I was a kid, I started thinking, you know, hot rods and motorcycles, you know, the dads were in the yard on Saturdays and Sundays messing with something and the kids were playing and mom was cooking hamburgers or whatever. And it was more family and more cool and everybody was into it. And so I started thinking, you know, that's what we're missing. So, you know, I'm still tattooed and jewelry and what have you. I got a poodle, you know, and
Dog. It's a secretly tough dog, to be honest.
They are. But I wanted to build a brand that was more family friendly. And that really is the secret to Gas Monkey is, you know, moms and grandmoms and kids. And, you know, I sell more onesies over there than I can even print fast enough, you know. And so it's a family brand. It's still got a lot of attitude and a lot of fun about it and a little bit of disrespect to the man, so to speak. But, you know, we're having a good time and it's a good, wholesome environment.
Yeah. And part of it, I think also you came from an advertising and marketing background prior. So you understood the branding of not even just the logo. Like in your book, you talk about how much conscious effort you put into the logo to be friendly and family friendly and not offensive, but still connote what you guys were trying to connote as an image. So it's the marketing of it is what worked. And evident, obviously, if you're the second most recognizable brand, that's pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a great run, but what we do in the next couple of years is going to make what we've done in the last 10 years look like child's play. We've got some amazing, amazing things fixed to happen, and it's going to be a lot of cool stuff all over the place.
Well, you talk about that a lot in that you feel the chains are finally off and that you can be more you. Or that can you give examples, if you can, of things that you've been wanting to do that you've not been allowed to or were prevented from some contract that you signed with Discovery, something that now is like, oh, now we can finally do this or that?
Oh, it's as simple as even doing this show with you. It would have taken an act of Congress and 17 letters and two lawyer things and everything else and 6 months to get this approved. It's that silly. I mean, when I signed my deal, it was in all media. Social media didn't exist.
Right.
As social media started happening, I wasn't allowed to partake in it. So, you know, we've got a brand new 40,000 square foot restaurant, our signature palace being built here in Dallas. We've got four more going up around the nation, including Las Vegas. We're opening some pop-up stores in other countries, most notably, hopefully, Japan.
Wow.
And somewhere down in South America. We're thinking maybe Portugal or something like that. Wow. And we're just kind of redeveloping the brand from what people were force-fed by Fast and Loud into letting them see what it really is all about. I don't know. We just dropped a video last night where we built a car.
The Thomas Crown Affair car?
The Thomas Brown, the four-door. But we're going to have a little bit more fun and get out there with our audience and consumers and people that dig us. I'm planning on embarking on a little bit of a world tour sometime as soon as this COVID BS is over with. And, you know, get out there. I want to really, you know, I was trapped for a few years, quite a few years. And I want to go see what I've been missing over the last 6 or 8 years and come out of it with a little bit more education and hopefully get to go see a lot of the friends that I've made over, you know, the interwebs and the telephone and see their world and see what they're into and what that culture is all about.
Did you have a say in last edit or not at all with the Discovery show? It is what it is when they were editing them.
I was never allowed to see the show until it aired.
Wow.
That can't ever. Be fun. They didn't even come to me for notes. They literally just filmed whatever and whatever showed up at the end is what showed up. So I learned very early on that if I wanted something to be a certain way, that I had to make sure that we filmed it a certain way so that they didn't have any choice but to edit it. In essence, I was directing the show without them knowing, because otherwise with, how would I say this diplomatically, the overwhelming automotive and motorcycle intelligence that is located at the building out there in L.A. is not what we were shooting for.
Can I just say, when you are diplomatic, the amount of shade that's still in it? Wonderful, sir. Outstanding.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I try to be. I actually there's a stack of papers about that thick that says what I can and can't say.
As part of your disillusion with Discovery, that's what happened.
Oh my God, you'd be surprised, brother. It's a thick piece.
What if you emailed it to me and then I said it, but you didn't say it, and I could get it out there for everybody? Let's go.
This would be about a 20-hour podcast.
Let's go. I'm your avatar, dog.
Richard, I love that James thinks he somehow figured out a workaround into a legal argument by sending it to him. That's really brilliant, James.
I'm old Jimmy Workaround, baby. That's who I is.
All right, before we go any further, if you are an auto mechanic, a do-it-yourself guy, a guy that likes to work on his own cars, this one's for you. It is rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best possible prices. The one-stop shop for everything auto parts. RockAuto.com has been in business for over 20 years, and they make it easy for you to find the parts you need at the best possible prices. No more talking to counter guys who need to order parts for you, aren't really sure what you're looking for, and never quite have what you need. And after all that hassle, they're still going to charge you storefront markups. At RockAuto.com, you'll find everything easily, whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or just some dude working on your car. Everyone has the same access to all that great, incredible pricing at rockauto.com. So head on over right now, rockauto.com. Check out all the parts available. It's just fun to browse. And remember, they have such good prices, they don't even have a promo code. Just go to rockauto.com. That's how confident they are. But when you do buy something at Rock Auto, let them know you heard about it on the SDR show. rockauto.com. Let's get back into it. Okay, so now one of the things I find, you know, so maybe people do not know this about you, which is crazy because you've been you were flipping cars since high school, that you found that you had a knack for it. You did like 20 or so of them when you were still in high school. But before you were 20, you became not only a policeman before 20, but then also a fireman and an EMT. I don't know if anyone else has that record of all three. Did you ever look into that? I have no idea.
Back then it was not uncommon. It was pretty hard to do, and I was just in the right place at the right time and what have you. But it was fun. I enjoyed the job, and I did it until I was around 26 or 7, and I just always had kind of an entrepreneurial bug. You know, I wanted to do something. I didn't know what it was, and so one day I just decided that wasn't for me, and here we are.
Yeah. So James, just because, again, you know, I do my crazy research and you're just a comic that rolls in and does what he does. Right.
He ain't done shit the whole show.
I get paid. I don't get paid by the minutes. Man, I'm so intimidated by you.
I love that he just threw shade at James as well. There's no restrictions on throwing shade at James.
Wait a minute. I pick and choose. I've jabbed in a few times. You're drinking beer at noon where you're at. This is fucking intimidating to me, sir. This is crazy. You're like my friends if they read more, but also had like beat up four more guys. Is that fair? Like you're incredibly intelligent, but I think that you've also probably like punched a lion. Like you strike me as that dangerous combo, sir.
No way, man. I'm a lover, not a fighter. Just ask the ladies.
Well, you know who says that? People who are lovers and fighters. That's been hilarious. Okay.
And by the way, which is interesting, is that he got shot. You got shot like, I forgot what age you were, but you got a settlement and you did get shot at a young age. It was in the arm, right? Am I right with that?
Yeah, it came in my shoulder here and went down my arm and blew out the bottom of my arm here.
But you made it. That you made some money from that, so that's good. It shows that you.
I didn't make much money. It was just more of the funny thing about insurance companies. You know what they told me? They said we have to settle with you. And I said, well, what do you mean you have to? I said, I'm not doing anything. You know, what's the deal? And they said, well, you got injured. And we have to give you some money so that we can have you sign this paper. And I said, well, I'll sign the paper. I got good insurance. I don't need anything. You know, and they're like, no, really, we have to give you something. So I think I got, I don't know, like 70 or 80 grand or something. I mean, it was a lot of money at the time, but, you know, I spent it all in about 3 months.
But one thing that I just finished the book a couple of days ago. But one of the things that I thought was great is that it shows you, when you have that entrepreneurial spirit, being broke a few times doesn't change the fact that you still want to push forward. You know,
you're still dreaming.
Yeah, which is a beautiful thing. Like your first garage went out of business. You know, you lost jobs a couple of times, but you just kept going forward. And even Gas Monkey Garage before the show got picked up was very close to closing down, but you just kept pushing forward.
We did. We got real close. I'm trying to figure out how to make payroll, and the only payroll was in. I said to make one check. I mean, you want to get humble real fast. Go to your wife who's gainfully employed and ask to borrow money for payroll for one guy, and because you don't have it. It'll humble you down real fast.
It's pretty wild. It's impressive too, though. It shows you when someone has the true entrepreneurial spirit. They're like, fuck it, I'm still pushing forward. I love that. It's what makes America the country to be able to do that. The weird thing that you say also, though, is that there's still cars to be found, which I find hard to believe, that with all the press that TV shows get and the internet and all these other things, there's still these like golden gooses in some old lady's garage somewhere. I can't believe that still exists.
They really do. It's everywhere. I have over in the next building a 1971 Cuda, which is different than a Barracuda, and original paint, original interior, original numbers matching everything, all original, that I just pulled out of a garage up in Wichita Falls, Texas, that is one owner. I mean, one freaking owner that never left its owner. It's unbelievable. And they're still out there, so... every day I get leads. And by the way, if you're listening, I'm buying cars every day. So, they're out there. And New York is one place that I would love to be able to spend a lot more time to find, because there are a lot of basements and a lot of buildings and a lot of garages that have a lot of cars.
Yeah, especially when you think that this side of the country is older than the other side of the country. Mm-hmm. So there's better chances that there's something just sitting somewhere to be discovered.
It really is. It's all over, but definitely East Coast, there's a lot of stuff. It's a lot more rusty and probably a lot more beat down, but at the same time, it's out there.
That's pretty wild. What's your favorite one that you found? Like, is there one that like is a holy grail? I know I read somewhere about a 58 Chevelle, but is there others that stick out? Like, I can't believe we actually stepped in shit and found this car.
Well, no 58 Chevelles. They didn't make those till the 60s, but anyway,
so 68 Chevelle. Maybe I just typed it wrong.
Just messing with it. I used to be an early Ford fan, 30s, 31, 32, 33, 34 Fords. I've got a ton of them. Those, I love to find the stories. I mean, what I'm really focused on now is the story. Why did it sit there so long? I don't care what it is, but why did it just get neglected or put away or not ever touched or forgotten? And the story is what I really like to hear the most of. And, now I'm kind of on the hunt for early Porsches and a lot of the German cars, or Italian cars. Those are starting to be very expensive to get your hands on.
Are most of these finds coming to you, or are you actually going out or having people go out to just look? Like, what's the methodology for that?
It's a combination. Sometimes I'll be somewhere and I'll just start asking people at the diner or who knows who or whatever, mm-hmm. and follow the lead. We get leads all the time at info@gasmonkeygarage.com. People send us cars that they have for sale or send us information about cars they know about. And then a lot of times if they find my number, they'll call me and or text me or whatever. I mean, I just bought a 47 car collection up in Minnesota the other day. Wow. Just a smattering of all kinds of weird stuff. But that's the other thing that we're doing a lot of now too, is buying big collections. I'll go in and buy the land. I'll buy the land, the houses, the barns, everything. I don't care. If the story's good and it can make a profit, then off we go. I mean, I don't invest in the market. I invest in what I know.
You should try and gone in 60 seconds it. Like, just go out there and steal 60 classic cars if you can. That would be cool.
I would like to do a Gone in 60 Seconds version where I go and buy 60 cars. That'd be cool.
James, you keep leaning forward like you have a very important question.
Well, no, it's
I thought he had gas.
that's both, Richard.
That's 25 hours a day. So here's my question. You know cars so well. Can you tell like what a person probably drives by just talking to them? Can you like read people? Are you like a car whisperer in that sense?
I don't know that I can do that. Maybe, from time to time. I don't know how good I give myself a 50-50 guess at it. unless they're wearing fucking khakis and then they're in a Chevy Bolt.
Do you have a favorite car to drive?
Right now, most of the time, I'm driving, if the weather's nice, I'm driving my Thomas Crown Mustang. If it's raining, then I'm probably driving the, Rolls Royce Wraith.
Wow.
I just like the car. It's comfortable. I can talk on the phone, stuff like that. It's a little douchebaggy, but I kind of like that. I'm poking fun a little bit.
Where do you rank my first car? 83 Oldsmobile, Omega. That's the one of the classics, right?
Well, it depends. Is it the four-door or the two-door?
Only two, baby. Only two.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a reason Oldsmobile is not around anymore.
There's a great reason.
Mine was a 69 Ford Monarch. That was my first car. My grandfather gave it to me.
Oh, man. Did your grandfather not like you or what?
Yeah, I mean, God. It was free. It was free. What do you want, man? Is there a holy grail car for you? Like, oh, my God, if one day I can get my hands on this?
Yeah, 69 Lamborghini Murcielago.
How much would one be?
Sorry, I said Murcielago. I did not mean that. 69 Lamborghini Mira. Mira.
How much would one of those be if you found one?
If it was in crappy condition in a barn, probably $700,000 or $800,000. If it ran and drove, probably $1.2 million, $1.3 million. If it was perfect, probably $3 million.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
My uncle is a very wealthy man, and he loves to drive fancy pants new cars, like Ferraris, a couple of Ferraris, Lamborghinis, a Bugatti, and all that shit. Like all the fancy race cars kind of thing. I'm almost 6'6". I can't fit in fucking any of them. So those don't interest me at all. I can't sit in those fucking cars. They're uncomfortable for me.
Yeah, the comfortable in a car stops at about 6 foot. That's 6'1", and it can get pretty tight in some of them. But the Lamborghini Mira is the most beautiful car ever made. It's an awesome vehicle, and I know where one is. I've been working the guy for about 7 or 8 years. I'm hoping I get my hands on it one of these days, but I don't know.
When I asked my uncle if I could use one of his cars when I'm there, he said, as long as the car manufacturer doesn't end in an I, you can take one. So I was like, Jesus, the BMW or the Mercedes, I guess. So now, one of the things that's interesting, and I don't know if this is still true, but at one point you were the Cannonball Run record holder in the world. Is that still true?
No, old news, man. That was 2007. I think that record's been beaten quite a bit by now, like 4 or 5 times. You know, we did beat the record in 2007 that had stood since 1979. So, you know, that was pretty cool. The record stood for a long time. And now I think we did it 31 hours and 59 minutes. And I think now it's down in the like 27 and a half range. So it's the people are going faster and faster.
That's crazy. And first of all, when I was a kid and saw the movie, I didn't realize it was a real thing. I thought it was just made up for the movie, and it apparently was a real thing, which I found out years later.
Yeah, it was. Right now.
It was a real deal.
I had no idea until you broke it. No idea.
Yeah. No, it was a real deal. People were they were protesting the speed limit and gas prices, and, you know, so they got out there and got a little crazy and had a little fun. The movie actually came about because some of the people, Hal and Brock Yates and all those guys, they did that stuff anyway, so it was pretty cool.
That's pretty wild. But I read in the book, maybe it was in the book, I think, that you used the device to change lights. You had friends that own a limo service to kind of block off traffic. Is in Cannonball Run, is anything legal? It doesn't matter?
There's no rules.
There's no rule. Just get from point A to point B, however you got to get, as long as you're driving. I'm assuming you couldn't get your car into a plane and go to the other side of the country. You have to drive the entire thing.
I would assume you have to drive, but it is also finish at all costs. You know, just make sure you finish. So people take off and they get so far behind hour wise that they give up about, you know, Ohio. Just like, screw it. And they go back home.
Do you have any desire to do it again? Or you don't want to do it anymore? Any one of the long endurance races? You mentioned a few in the book, but do you have any desire to do them anymore?
I would like to do the Paris to Peking or Peking to Paris, either direction. I don't care. And I wouldn't mind doing some other rallies in other parts of the world. But the Cannonball, I'm done. I'm finished. I'll hang up my balls, so to speak.
Hey, you and me both, we're getting older.
What about the run in Smokey and the Bandit? Would you go from Texarkana to, I believe, Florida? Would you do that with Schlitz beer?
It was with Coors Beer.
God damn it.
And the Yellow Jackets.
Of course you get it right. Of course you got it right, sir. God damn
well,
it, you're the best.
You know, Burt Reynolds was a friend of mine, and I did get to film with him. So, yes, we've actually been talking about doing some type of real Smokey the Bandit run. We haven't really perfected the idea yet, but we are playing with it.
I do know that Cannonball Run was the first movie, I believe, to have post-credit scenes. I could be wrong on that, but it was the first to show bloopers in post-credits. I think Cannonball Run was the first movie to do that.
I'm not sure. That's a new one on me. I have to
I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure. All right, before we go any further, have you noticed all prices around the world going up, be it meat prices, rent, gas, everything going up? You know where it's not going up? YoKratom.com, still home of that $60 kilo. In 2022, no one should go without Kratom. So head on over to YoKratom.com. You just need that $60. You get to buy it in a kilo, which, as Big J says, is the coolest way to buy Kratom. It's YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. You cannot go wrong. A bunch of custom curated Kratom created at YoKratom.com and sent directly to you at wholesale prices. Support the sponsors that support the show. You know, Shannon loves YoKratom. She has that blend. I think it is called Trainwreck. It's her favorite. So just go to YoKratom.com. It's that $60 kilo shipped directly to you, the STR Show fan. All right, let's get back into it. One thing I saw that was probably, this again was probably a couple years ago, a little humbling, was watching you crash that Hellcat. But that was a fun, I'm sure that was fun as hell to do that race, right?
Which one?
I saw a race that you did where you had a Hellcat that you hit into the side of the wall.
Oh yeah, that was up at Woodward Dream Cruise, and they had some people racing each other, and I thought I had it made. I was like, I've got this made, because I was real involved at the beginning of the Hellcat program and actually even filmed some commercial stuff before the Hellcat ever came out. And so I knew where all the secret buttons were. I knew the secret code to put into the computer. Well, go 3 or 4 years later, when I did this race, I'm like, I'm going to whoop all these people's rear because I know how to do this. Well, I get in the car and the computer was different because it changed over the years. So I'm like punching buttons. I'm like, oh my God, this is not what it's supposed to be. And so I lost it and hit the wall, which was kind of fun. You know.
By the way, I like that a lot of your stories involve you figuring out a way to buck the system.
Exactly. You know, I don't try to cheat, but I try to win creatively.
Yeah, I like that. If it's still, I'm sure it would still be considered legal if you won. You use the car to your advantage. There's nothing wrong with that. So you've been doing this for so long, flipping cars, working on cars, etc. Do you still have the joy and passion for that side of the business, or is it the other stuff that brings you the joy, the social media, the contests and stuff like that? Are you still getting the joy out of the actual, you know, flipping of cars and redoing cars and stuff like that?
No, I really am. Here, please, bear me. Bear assistant. Okay. No, I love building the cars. I mean, we had fun with the Thomas Brown thing yesterday or over the weekend. And, you know, we're, you know, chasing them, getting to know the story, getting to know the old guys. Look at that. Boom.
Whoa. Hold on. Look. Boom. Right there.
I feel like we're interviewing Stone Cold. This is amazing.
You know, getting to find the stories, tell the stories, you know, dig these things out of the garages and the barns and the what have you. It's a lot of fun. And as far as building the cars, we love it. We've got a school bus we're building right now. And next up after that is a 59 Corvette, but it's going to be right-hand drive on a Roadster Shop chassis going over to Spain.
Wow. That's pretty wild. I also, by the way, like that, you know, just again, James and me doing my research, one of his first jobs out of high school was with Miller Lite, and then he became a Miller Lite spokesperson.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, they don't pay me anymore, and that pisses me off.
Those bastards.
That's horrible. They said, Richard, there's hundreds of episodes of TV out there with you drinking Miller Lite. Why would we pay you? And I said, because there's hundreds of episodes of me drinking Miller Lite.
Yeah.
You know, but... No, that's the funniest thing is how I got into the police academy. I used to drive the beer route at night, the keg route. So when a bar would run out of keg beer, you know, they'd call the dispatch, and I'd run over and take them an extra keg and trade it out. And there's this one bar that I used to go to in Fort Worth called the Poop Deck. And there was this old drunk guy there all the time sitting on the corner. And I'd usually sit there and have a beer with him or something. And one day he's, what the hell are you going to do with your life, kid? You know, you're just wasting away and delivering beer. I said, well, you know, I sure would like to be a police officer one day. And he's like, well, why aren't you? And I said, well, you got to get hired. I said, or you got to get sponsored by a city to be able to go to the police academy. He goes, well, hell, I'm the mayor of such and such town. I'll leave that out. A week and a half later, I was in the police academy.
Wow. That's right. No, right. That's a pretty wild story. Now, when you filmed your last episode of Fast and Loud in 2020, right? Is that what it was? In 2019. Did you know it was the last episode at that point, or it was in between seasons?
No, I knew. I absolutely knew, and was very excited. It was hard to contain my enthusiasm.
Wow, that's why. In the last scene, you could see him just dancing around the set for the entire episode, and nobody knew why.
Now, it was time for it to come to an end. I mean, you can only find a car, buy the car, fix the car, sell the car so many times. I mean, we did it a couple of hundred times, so it was time for it to change. And, you know, we've got some really cool stuff that's going to start happening on our YouTube channel that is going to be in the show world. We're going to have our own shows, but, you know, they live in the internet now. They don't live in on cable.
Right, which is, I mean, it is where it is. It's just why our network exists. So it is youtube.com/getmonkified will take you to the Gas Monkey Garage.
Or just Gas Monkey Garage on YouTube.
Yeah, Gas Monkey Garage or gasmonkeygarage.com. It's all there. And I see that you like for instance, the Monkey Trap is where you're interviewing people. You did have Mark Cuban on back in April or May, I think it was. So that you're going to have different show themes on YouTube. Is that the idea?
Yeah, we've kind of dropped the podcast thing. It's kind of boring.
How about you go fuck yourself?
Whoa. Shots just fired, baby.
Just kidding. No, we kind of dropped it because what we feel is that, you know, everybody's going to have their own show now. And so we're letting the audience go wherever we go, and whatever happens, happens. And the podcast thing, we'll do it from time to time, but it's not going to be something that we do all the time. And we're going to be showing the audience where we're going, what we're doing, the challenges we're up against. You know, one of the secrets of Gas Monkey is we always let the audience in on what we're attempting, at what angle I'm going to make next, you know, what am I going to try to get into, and what have you, and let them see the business side of that aspect and see if it works, and also be a part of it.
Yeah, it's also, I think you have, you personally, I think have 2 million or plus on Instagram. Gas Monkey, I think has 4 million. Whatever you're fucking doing, you guys are fucking killing it. It is pretty crazy. I know for a while you had some other ventures that did stop. Are you still doing the Gas Monkey Cinnamon Tequila, or is that not around anymore?
That is coming back. We diplomatically needed to slow that down a little bit because there were some changes in some of the partners that were involved. And so the Gas Monkey Tequila is coming back along with a vodka and a rum. I am launching a new wine initiative in the second quarter of this year that's going to be pretty wild. We've got the restaurants being built and going up as we speak. And then we'll be racing, most notably in about 2 weeks, we'll be racing the 24 Hours of Daytona with a 2022 Lamborghini team. And then in May, we are sponsoring the FHO Racing BMW in the Isle of Man overseas.
Oh, wow. That's where the Bee Gees are from.
Yeah. So we've got the top seed team, Peter Hickman, fastest guy on the Isle of Man, fastest lap, fastest speed. And we're going to try to go for all three podiums. So we've got a lot of stuff out.
By the way, James, if there was ever a question that I'm not manly, the fact that I know where the Bee Gees are from was enough to prove my point.
The fact that you're talking to one of the manliest men any of us have met, and you brought up the Bee Gees in regards to where he's racing.
Hey, I did tell him to go fuck himself just about 4 minutes ago. He didn't hurt me. So
and
that's
also
something.
The beauty of you saying that you're a real puss, and behind you, you're two goddamn New York City fucking bicycles. It's all this has been the most perfect.
Hey, I'm very
thing
open with who I am, man. I'm very comfortable in
my that, and he had to tell us who, and they're working on the elevator in my home.
Yo, the pace you gave him over the elevator
was the greatest thing I've ever seen. Bragging on air. I just wanted to explain why, if I have to run out for a second, I'm trying to be respectful. For God's sakes.
I love all this. Hey, Richard, can I ask you this? Because I grew up with mechanics, and I always found this weird. I don't know how common it is. You brought up, like, it's a family thing and Saturday afternoon. So I go over to my boys, and we'd hang out, and I'd wait for him to get done working in the garage with his brothers and his dad. And I noticed something weird. Is it common for people to use old underwear in the garage to like clean things?
You definitely have some strange friends.
Okay, good.
Wow.
Good. I'm pulling this clip.
By the way, I've never worked in a garage in my life, and I already knew the answer was no.
No, but they told me. I'm like, what are you doing? What is in your hand? He's like, oh, this is like old underwear. Old underwear? You're using old underwear? He goes, everyone uses it.
You need to get a better class of friends, James.
Yes.
Wild?
Yeah, if you've got to use an old pair of underwear to clean your hands, then you got a lot more problems than dirty hands.
And if your ex-girlfriend is using an old condom to clean the house, I would worry as well.
No, I think that's very promising.
By the way, I have to give you credit, Richard. When we bring up other things like the old business, discovery, etc., you're so diplomatic, you should think about your next career being a politician, because I've never had someone be so delicate with what I assume are probably not delicate situations.
Well, that's because I have been threatened with all kinds of awesome things.
Again, by calling them awesome things is enough to tell me that you are definitely delicately placing the way this thing is going on, which is pretty crazy.
I think the next book should be called Diplomatically.
Diplomatic
Done.
Things.
Done.
All right, so we're going to do the first first questions, and then we'll wrap this up. But I thank you for your time. It's time for the first in the show.
The first time ever I saw Concert Detroit.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We ask everybody that's ever been on the show the first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll by asking you the first concert you went to, but hopefully something we know, not some local fucking band we never heard of. It doesn't have to be rock. It's whatever was your first concert that sticks out at you.
Oh, no. The first concert that I went to, being our age, the first concert that I remember going to was Elvis Presley in 75 maybe.
Wow. So you were 5 years old.
Excellent.
5 or 6 years old. I just remember all the sparkly lights and all the crap. I don't know. But, you know, being 52 years old to be able to say I saw Elvis Presley, that's kind of cool. But as far as being a young teenager in Fort Worth and all that kind of stuff, I went to Six Flags here and saw Molly Hatchet.
Wow. That's a good one.
Some of that.
I dig that. That's pretty cool. Was it a band that you wanted to see, or you just were at Great Adventure and they were playing?
It was just like I was there and I got to go, you know. So, you know, we went and saw Molly Hatchet.
Are you a big rock and roll dude?
I'm not a big music person in that I don't really pay attention to who's singing what or pay attention to, you know, I whatever's on. If I like it, I like it. If I don't, you know, I don't.
And okay. Fair enough. You mentioned, before we go to the other two, you mentioned that Burt Reynolds became a friend. Can I ask how that came about?
Well, we actually ended up filming with him for an episode of Fast and Loud. I made a Trans Am for a friend of mine in New Orleans, and we got to go to Burt's house and film with him and talk to him about, you know, smoking the Bandit and all that kind of stuff. And actually have one of my most prized possessions is in the other room. He gave me one of the hats from Smoking.
Wow. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's really fucking cool. He came out of the house all hunched over on his cane and, you know, reaching the end of his life. And he goes, I didn't know who I was going to give this to. He goes, but I want to give it to you. And I was like, I can't take that. And he goes, well, you will. And I was like, all right, you know.
Wow.
Super cool cat. And we did a lot of stuff with him at Barrett Jackson and stuff like that. And, I watched every one of his movies every day my whole life. I mean, Burt Reynolds was, my second hero next to my dad.
I can't remember who he was on this talk show with, but there's a very famous clip where he throws water at someone next to him on The Tonight Show. Fuck, it's a really, if you put a Burt Reynolds throws water, it's a great clip where somebody, he felt disrespected him on the panel, and he just takes his whatever water or coffee, or maybe it was vodka, who the fuck knows, and he just threw it on the other guy. It's a great clip. I recommend everyone to watch it. So now we go to first drug you ever did, ideally after weed, unless weed wasn't the first drug you ever did, or weed was the hardest drug you ever did. You know what I'm saying?
The first time I did a drug was weed. It was with my dad. My dad was real cool. He goes, son, you're going to do drugs. And I'm like, no, dad. And he goes, son, you're going to do drugs. Just face it. I'm like, dad, I'm never going to do drugs. Drugs are bad. You know, I mean, we grew up in the Reagan era with Nancy Reagan, right? And he goes, well, you're going to do them. And if you're man enough to do them, then you're man enough to come tell me and we'll get the good shit.
Wow.
So I told my dad I wanted to smoke some weed one day, and so he didn't have to go anywhere. He just reached in his pocket and
Oh my God.
That's awesome.
I didn't think you could top the kissing booth, but you goddamn just did.
I think you really, I think your dad really was the Fonz. I think that really might be where the, his character was based on. Now, what about the first time you had sex?
Oh God. You know, I mean, like real sex or getting loose a little too early and slipping in with a limp one.
Well,
whichever one comes to mind, my friend,
please.
You know, I think that my first time, lasted all of about maybe, 14 seconds, and it was on a cruise ship out in the middle of the Caribbean when I was 15, probably. Yeah, 15. And
it's a girl you met on the cruise ship just by randomness?
Yeah, yeah, just a chick that was on the cruise ship with her family, and, you know, got her back in the room and, you know, got a little amorous for 14 or so seconds, and then it was over, and I felt bad, so I left.
And also congratulations, I know you got married a little over a year and a half ago, I guess it is at this point, right? Somewhere in 2020 you got married. So congratulations. And you are awesome. you're one of the few people I know that married the same girl twice and then married someone else, so kudos on I guess it's the fourth time's the charm, they say.
Yes, exactly. Now my wife Katarina is the most awesome girl on the planet. I didn't think I'd ever get married again, and it took me about one date with her to realize that that was the one.
That's pretty cool, because I saw that. You mentioned, in the book, that you were very close and stayed close to your ex-wife. Even when you split up, you still stayed good friends. And you divorced the second time in 2019 and then got married in 2020. So it was one of those love at first sight things.
It really was. And, she's out there. You can Google her, and trust me.
I looked at pictures. She's very, very pretty. I saw it. Yeah. Of course. Richard, I'm a creep. Of course I looked. Come on now. That's what I do. But kudos to you, sir, for sure.
Well, kudos to me for being able to attract somebody like that. Usually they run away.
Right. Do you ever pull down your pants and say, look at the real gas monkey? Have you ever done
that?
I've been known to do my little flat pants in the mornings after I get out of the shower.
All right, fair enough. So your Instagram is R Rawlings, obviously at Gas Monkey Garage. Or Gas
R,
Monkey Garage.
R Rawlings.
Yeah. Well,
three R's.
Three R's. Sorry, my eyes are fucking playing tricks on me. Yeah, so three R's and then Allings, if you want to be, even have it written down that way, but I skipped one of the R's. So triple R-A-W-L-I-N-G-S or at Gas Monkey Garage and GasMonkeyGarage.com. Your YouTube channel. You don't need much help from us. God, you guys are fucking killing it with your content. But is there anything else you want to plug before we go around the room and do plugs?
No. I mean, right now, the best thing that I'd want to plug is, we've got, I think, 2 weeks left in the giveaway. Every dollar they spend at GasMonkeyGarage.com gets them entered to win an opportunity to come to my shop here, bring their significant other or a friend, and they each get to take one of my cars. They can pick two cars.
Jesus Christ, that's a crazy. So you just gave away the 10,000, and now this is the next one.
Well, it's going on at the same time. So anybody who entered for the 10,000 is automatically entered to win the two cars. But they get to come here, party with me, have some Miller Lights and some pizza, and then they each get to pick a car. And, that's going to be pretty crazy.
Is it going to be like that scene in The Jerk where there's all these great prizes and they say, no, you can only get this one or this one in this section? When it comes to
it's the entire monkey trap. There'll probably be between 20 and 30 cars in there, and they get to take whichever.
Are you going to let them know which one has the most value, or they have to know that going into it?
They're
going
to have to study that themselves.
All right, fair enough. James, your plugs.
Real quick, Mark Summers was the guy that Burt Reynolds threw water on, the host of Double Dare. Makes it even cooler that was the fucking host of a goddamn shitty Nickelodeon
show. By the way, it's really worth looking up because you can see that just Burt Reynolds was just a fucking badass. It's a great scene. All right, guy, James, your plugs.
The James Madden on Instagram. Check out my new podcast dropping in the end of January called Thanks for Coming Out, a podcast about bombing with my boy Shuley, formerly of The Stern Show. And The Check Spot, my latest album, was voted Album of the Year by the Intero Bang. Go get that. It's me doing stand-up, answering questions from the audience while they're paying their bills and are drunk. It's pure comedy fucking chaos, baby. The Check Spot. Yes.
All right, follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness with the founder of Good Sugar comes out every single Monday. It's called the Good Sugar Podcast. My last question for you, sir, and by the way, first of all, thank you so much for coming on. It was great to have you on. Obviously, we're fans and appreciative, and maybe one day I'll hit you up and get a CUDA. If I somehow win a few million extra dollars, I'll try and get a 6970 CUDA for you. I, as I said, was a big fan of the book, enjoyed the book. There's an open-ended question. Feel free to tell me you don't want to answer it, so I'm apologizing in advance, okay? Obviously, you had a great relationship with your dad and still too to this day. He was your inspiration behind everything. He was the one that helped you work on cars as a kid. And also, his father got remarried. He was with forever. But you mentioned in the beginning of the book, your mother left very young. And there's no resolve on that unless I skipped over it somehow. Did you ever try and reach out to your mother? Did she ever reach out to you? You make these millions of dollars, you become super famous. You would think sometimes that's where people come out of the woodwork, but I'm sorry if it's a sensitive question.
No, it's not sensitive. I mean, my mother left when I was young, and I respect her for that. I don't respect her for the fact that she then tried to come into my life a few times over the years, regretting her decision. It was a decision she made, and she lives out in Longboat Key or Sarasota or somewhere like that, and is doing her own thing. She reaches out every once in a while. We just don't have that typical mother-son relationship. It's more like this, just a lady I know and, you know, what have you.
Right. I mean, believe me, I apologize for being an idiot and asking that question, but it was a lingering question that I wanted to ask.
Oh, it's fine. My mom went, when she left, she went on to be, you know, big things and do good, cool stuff. So now she's just living it up in Longboat.
And my other question that I basically got the answer for, by the way, you danced around the saying there were other TV show guys, makes me think that you're still not on great relations with a couple of them that were.
No, we're all fine. I mean, we're all fucking old men now. but I respect them. I looked up to them. I tried to get on TV. I tried to be them in a little bit different way. And, I wouldn't be here without them laying the groundwork. So, onward and upward for everyone.
Was there ever a time where you guys got together and broke bread, you know, the OGs of this world, or no?
You know, there hasn't been. I don't think they like my particular brand of humor. I'm just, if you make your, I don't know how you'd say it, just never happened.
They do seem to be the far more serious version of it. You seem to be the more lighthearted version of it.
There's no seriousness to be had. I mean, I get paid to drink beer and play with cars. How serious you got to be.
Yeah, I hear you, buddy. Well, thank you so much. We always end the show every week with a song of the week. I know you're not a big music guy, so we'll just play a Molly Hatchet song, unless there's a song that comes to mind that you'd rather us play.
Oh, Molly Hatchet is a fine, man. It's my first concert.
All right, we'll throw on a Molly Hatchet song. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time on the STR Show. Richard Rawlings, thank you so much, and we'll see you on the STR Show. Peace.
Listening to the SDR Show.